Welcome to the Collide Podcast. We're a growing community of everyday chicks colliding with Jesus in our mess, our pain, our joy, and our stories. We value showing up as we truly are, so that's what you'll find here. Walls and masks being torn down so that we can allow Jesus to meet us where we truly are and hear about other women doing the same. We can't wait to collide with you.
Healing is not convenient. Stopping everything to fix a problem, like taking your car to the shop, is not convenient. And like running on empty and running in your, like driving your broken car is making things worse.
Hey guys, welcome to the Collide Podcast. I'm so excited that you hopped on today, and I'm excited about who I get to have a great conversation with. I've invited Kara Carroll, who I've known for years. She's the middle school ministry coordinator with Young Life, and she's actually one of the funniest, most energetic, magnetic people I know. She's newly married. She has a 4-pound dog that, of course, she named Larry. And she's a big fan of painting, audiobooks, mozzarella sticks, and stretchy pants. And I have known her for years. In fact, lived at my house at one point. She served on our Collide volunteer ministry team. And she's been dear to the Collide ministry and now serves full-time with Young Life on staff. And I've watched Kara grow not only in her leadership and impact and influence on young people, but I have watched her exemplify bravery and authenticity in such an incredible way, right smack dab in the midst of struggle. And so I purposely and intentionally wanted to have Kara on the podcast today to share a bit of that story with you and I, because I think it will meet us in the places that we're at in an incredible way. And so, Kara, I'm so glad that you hopped on the podcast today.
Yay! Thank you. It's so fun. It's just so fun to be here.
Well, Kara, I know we're going to get serious here in a minute and talk about some important topics that pertain to all of our lives. But before we do that, I'm hoping you can share a bit about what's keeping you sane and full of joy in the midst of COVID. I mean, are you TikToking it up? What are you doing for fun right now?
Yeah, I got pretty burnt out of TikTok like right before quarantine. I was like, I remember right after the wedding, November of like 2019, getting on it and just spending hours every day. And thankfully, after the pendulum swing of just being obsessed with it, I kind of stopped like kind of around the beginning of quarantine, actually. Still post from time to time and hope to get famous, but it's not TikTok these days. I love to knit. Ricky and I just finished the Harry Potter series. We're now going through Lord of the Rings. Walking my tiny dog has definitely kept me sane. And just, oh gosh, what else do we do?
Well, I was going to say, you just recently got this dog. You have to tell us why you chose to name your dog Larry.
Okay, well, yeah, so Larry, we have talked about a dog forever. Ricky grew up with a boxer and I grew up with cats and feel slightly robbed in that my childhood was not as good. Once I like went to college and realized the impact of pets, I was like, mother and father, how dare you? So we've been talking about it for a while. And when, you know, we're still kind of in the renting life, and we'd talk to our landlords and we're like, hey, so a dog. And they were like, I mean, a small one. And I was like, okay, which was I would be so down with. And we were looking on Craigslist, and this dog actually came with the name Larry. Him and his litter mates are the Three Stooges. And I think that dogs with people names are the best thing in the world. So when they were like, this is Mo, this is Curly, this is Larry, I was like, great, we're going to take home Larry forever. So Larry is just our little ball of craziness. And it's been fun, mostly. I definitely questioned it at the beginning and cried a lot and thought about taking him back. But it was only a few times. Now he doesn't pee inside. So it's better.
Oh my gosh. I love your newlywed life. I love it. It's hilarious. Kara, I watched you in this last year or so recognize your need for help, and not only recognize it, but actually get help, and not only get help, but be very transparent in your community when you needed it as a leader. And I am curious if you'd be willing to share, what were the indicators to you that this was the time that you needed help?
Yeah. It was a little bit of deja vu from when I was in the beginning of high school, was when I first became aware of my depression and had started saying things about how I felt about my existence that scared some of my friends. And that was kind of the first time when I realized, when I'm honest about how I feel, there's people in my community who can't not say something to other people to get me the care that I need. And so it was scary because that's what was able to get me into counseling the first time ever was in high school, I think like the end of middle school, beginning of high school, and get me some proper treatment for my depression and my anxiety. And I felt like there had been a pretty decent season of managing that through high school and college. After graduating from college, there was just, it was a big life transition. There were so many variables, and I had started going back to a counselor through Collide, was able to hook me up with an incredible counselor. And, from there, that counselor had said, I think we need some other people in the room. And she had referred me to an eating disorder counselor and a psychiatrist. And I had been kind of consistently seeing them for about a year and a half. And I think at that point knew in my experience with counseling that, I know that there's certain things that if I really say how I'm feeling, they're going to do that same thing of, we need to get more people in the room. Thankfully, God has given me this gift of, my emotions are on my face a lot. And so my husband was really, I think, able to call out some of my insincerity about how I was doing with eating disorder and mental health support. It wasn't that my support team wasn't good enough, but my counselor, one of them had said, it just doesn't feel like once a week seeing me and then seeing this other gal is what's gonna sustain you. And there was something that I had finally said that was pretty, it was like, when I look in the mirror, I have these thoughts about self-harm and restriction. And it was like, I just finally, those words came out to my counselors of hey, I've been able to say all these things and we've been able to go week by week and check in, but this is what's under all of that is I hate to the point of severe pain, X, Y, and Z. And that was when the conversation of going to a place where they care 75% of your day for X number of days, specifically about you and your care. And that was really scary because I could have just, been gone to Ricky and him be like, how was counseling? And I was like, oh, it was fine again. And really, I could have, again, not said what had gone on in that counseling room. But because I think those people in that room also got really real with me of listen, Kara, this, we've been doing that thing where I was like, yeah, this is how I feel. And they were like, yeah, try this. And it was good. But then, when it was like when I would teach swim lessons and be like, hey, yeah, Tina, do not dunk that other kid. Please stop. That's, I feel like how my counselors got with me was homegirl, we care about you and we need to get you the support for you to live this beautiful life. And so it was a lot of conversations of doing that with people of I can't do this anymore. I've tried to do it all by myself. I've tried to to get care and still pretend like I'm doing it all myself. And the world has to stop. My world has to stop in order for me to do this well, because I was trying to do it in the midst of so many different things. And I needed to like go into the vacuum of a treatment center in order to do it well, and to do it in a way that would have just like the long-term impact that I needed.
It's so interesting to me because you keep using this phrase of getting more people in the room. And it sounds like you even had moments where you knew that's what you needed, yeah. but you were almost protecting yourself from getting it. And I think a lot of us do that. I think a lot of us try and work on our stuff ourselves, or work on our stuff ourselves along with God. We'll pray, or, you know, we know and we agonize, or you even had people in the room yeah. of your life. You had a couple counselors in place, and yet it would be so easy to say, well, I already have help in place and it's not helping, and what else could I possibly do? But I think what you're really inviting right. us into is, if you know that there's struggles and issues in your life and you're in a place of getting unhealthy, or the things you're saying, the things you're thinking are scaring you, and getting more people in the room scares you even more, that might be an indication that there's something really unhealthy or not right. And you started to see that in yourself, almost totally, like you could cover yeah. it up and go home and tell your husband how great counseling was, because you didn't want more people in the room. And I think a lot of times that scary feeling where you know you need more people in the room, you just kind of ignore it. And you, it sounds like, got to a place where you knew that's what you needed and you got real about it. I'm hoping you can invite everyone listening into just how inconvenient this timing was for you to go and get the help that you needed.
Yeah, it was. It's so funny, because one of the counselors said that there's never a good time to take care of yourself. It feels like it's always in this culture of urgency. The idea of taking care of yourself, you know, there's this culture of self-care that I think is beautiful, and at the same time, the hard work self-care is never convenient. And we had been having, so my husband proposed the February of 2019, and in May following that, the counselors and I had been talking a little bit more about what going to a treatment program would look like, because when they were toying that around, my first thought was, I don't need to go to a hospital with a feeding tube, because that's not my problem. I don't need to go to treatment for an eating disorder. That's not my problem. And we took that month of May to really kind of deconstruct what that would look like. And I was feeling pretty okay with the idea. Like, at that point, I'd told Ricky, my husband, I'd talked to my family more about this idea of going somewhere to get more care. And then I went to work. Part of my job is spending a month out of the summer at a Young Life camp. And so I was at a camp called Malibu for the month of June. And something that I, thankfully, in my experience prior to that in counseling, I knew that part of the work that I did become comfortable with up to that point was letting in close people about the support that I need in real time to get through the day. And so my job at the camp for that month was, I was going to be on stage and have a really weird schedule. And when everyone was eating, I would be on stage. And so my schedule was really made it hard to honor this time where I needed to focus on eating and nourishing myself, because I was going to, in order for me to do my song and dance for the kids, like I needed sustenance. And so the team of guys that I was on, as well as my camp director, I was pretty frank with them of like, listen, this is where I'm at with an eating disorder that I have been struggling with, working on for years. I need to be able to get food during the day and not feel rushed in order to not be anxious and shut down and completely derail what I came here to do and what God is going to use that I provide. So I was able to have some cool conversations to set me up. It was just like almost an assurance of like, these people have your back. Your family has had your back. Your support team, your community has all had your back. Your like a treatment center will also have your back. So coming home from camp, it was then July. I think the idea of leaving for a few months had really started to creep in, and it was going to be right when things were going to be kicking off in the fall for my job again. My wedding was on November 3rd. It was just so inconvenient. Even in my, at the time, somewhat of singleness and not having kids and having a fairly flexible job, I could still find excuses from dawn to dusk about reasons to not go. And that just became so real of one of the counselors, Sarah, was like, you will always find reasons. It will never be convenient. Like, healing is not convenient. Stopping everything to fix a problem, like taking your car to the shop, is not convenient. And like running on empty and running in your, like driving your broken car is making things worse. So what was encouraging in that was when I had conversations with my boss and again with my family and support team, you know, I just was given yes over yes over yes of doing it. Like, we found a day of wedding coordinator who was down in Seattle where I was doing treatment. So I was meeting with the gal that was planning our wedding while I was at treatment because she lived right there. And I, you know, my husband had a job where he was able to come spend 2 or 3 days out of the week with me in Bellevue with my family. And so it was so, like, I can't even say how inconvenient it was, Willow. And at the same time, like, the world had to stop, and yes, planning a wedding while also navigating eating disorder treatment, a lovely storm of so many emotions, trying wedding dress shopping while in ED treatment is, I don't suggest it, but I also do suggest crying to the staff associate on the phone before showing up and saying, do not do that stupid ring the bell thing. We are going to do this quietly. And no one is going to celebrate. We're just going to pick a damn dress, okay? So that went fine. But it was hard. And it almost had to be hard in order for it to be the good work that would create the beauty in that hard work and on the other side.
You know, I ask you that question, Kara, because I know that pressing the pause button on life for any of us to get help never feels convenient, and there's never a good time. And yet you made the time. To be clear, you left your job in the high season and you left the town you lived in and this exciting time of being engaged, about to be married, to go into rehab. I think this is incredibly brave and incredibly courageous on your part. And what I want to hear from you, what did it require of you to stop everything you were doing and finally say yes to this move?
I think it was, and I know like not everyone can say this, but it was like the blessing that I had from my people, especially my job. I felt like I was going to be like letting down my boss and my boss's boss. Like, when you know, in the ministry I work in, and in the, like, it's very intertwined. Like, there's so many overlapping relationships and friendships. And so I, you know, am having this conversation with my boss/dear friend who is then, you know, asking her boss/dear friend if I qualify for medical leave. Like, it it was like intimate conversation over intimate conversation of all these other people who love Jesus and love me that were saying, yes, go. Like, God's got it. It's like when you like don't check your email for a few days and that person who emailed you something super urgent and didn't hear back from you was actually able to figure it out. And they were like, oh yeah, it was on my phone. I found the picture I needed. Thanks. Like, it was that same, like, things are going to be okay here because A, God's got it. He, like, even if Young Life wasn't in Bellingham, God is. And so even if Kara isn't in Bellingham, God is. And God is in that treatment center waiting for you. And he's in your car as you're driving down there. And he's in, like, he's with you all the way. And it was that affirmation and permission that I don't know necessarily if I needed permission, but as like someone who I like, that verbal affirmation was so, so encouraging. It's like when I would call my mom in college and be like, is it okay if I fail calculus? And she was like, yeah, it's fine. That's a crappy class. It was just like, when I heard this yes after yes, that was like the okay, like I am allowed to do this. And I guess it was just all this affirmation from my people. But I say that so maybe reluctantly because I also know that not everyone has that and not everyone is going to get the yeses from the people around them to have the permission to take care of themselves. And so I feel like there's also something so vulnerable about just owning and like almost demanding it for yourself and not just asking the people around you, but telling them like, listen, this is important to me and I need this and I'm doing it no matter what. And I think that can be not just maybe leaving for some sort of rehab or whatever, but it's when the life that we are in and our values are bumping up against each other and we have to raise a flag and say, hey, listen, I need to do this thing to take care of me and my tribe. And you're going to see that some people are going to follow you and some people are going to hold to you and some people aren't. And that is so heartbreaking and so hard. And that's kind of maybe a little bit of a, just this empathy that I have also for the people who are saying, I don't have people who are going to say yes with me, that you are going to have people who will say no. You're going to have people who are bummed and not get it. I have people in my circle who are like, still like, mental health isn't a thing. Like, what's an eating disorder? This, you don't need this, blah, blah, blah. And that's fine. Like, you don't have to understand it for me to know that this is important to me. And I was also surprised by the people who did come by my side and say, I'm with you. It required also me to, I guess, do it either way. You know, like, as I was at a treatment center where there were kids there who were under 18, and then there was an adult group of all of us over 18. And the thing was, like, the under 18s, like, their parents made them go. Maybe they wanted to go, but they also didn't have the whole say. Whereas what was required of me was, like, I had to still do it. You know, I could have changed my mind. I could have not gone. There were other patients who would show up who wouldn't show up because they didn't want to come one day because they couldn't do the work that day. And that, like, it was hard work. I get that. What it required of me was still going every day, still doing it and still committing and showing up and being present when I was there too. And over again, saying the real stuff and doing the real work and doing that every day. And sometimes that was really little acts. Like, sometimes just showing up is what I needed to do. Other days it was eating that food that has been off the table for a very long time. Things like that, I'm not saying that, like, if you aren't like balls to the wall every day doing it, then you aren't doing enough, because every day I think your capacity is different. But it's like, even just those, just showing up was required.
Mm-hmm. I love that you experienced community, your people rallying around you and giving you the yes. Yes, make time. Yes, go. Yes, press pause right before you get married, all those things. Because I've really thought about your story and empathized with the idea that I feel like there could have been so many things that talked you out of it. I mean, you know, you could have worried about people judging you. You mentioned your work, you know, judging you, the kids at Young Life judging you, your future in-laws judging you. I mean, the list goes on of like all the things that could have kept you from going and getting the help you need, but instead you did it. And I love that God just surrounded you with people who that yes. You know, you experienced this great community. And you even mentioned not everyone will have that experience, but you also know what a person needs from other people when they need help. And I'm wondering, you know, when I think about people listening who, you know, are walking alongside people who need that yes, what are some things not to do? Like, what are some things someone who needs to go get help doesn't need to hear from people?
Oh, wow. That's a good question. To do something, I think, long term, or even to do it well, to do it in a way that is sustainable or healthy or just the way that we were meant to, it can't be fueled by shame. And I think if someone feels shamed or guilted into doing something, then they might still do it, but they aren't doing it for the right reason. Or like they aren't doing it in a way that is going to keep them in that journey of healing. I've really, really learned in my mental health journey that like shame is not from God, and shame is not going to produce life. And that isn't where beauty and goodness comes from. And so if we're another voice seeking beauty and goodness for our friends, I don't think we actually do seek that for them if we're trying to guilt and shame them into getting that help. I think it's our own need for control and our own need to be able to help and do something that is creating this desire to use unhelpful tactics to get that person there. That's an us issue, not a them issue, if we're trying to help them that way.
Absolutely. You know, you bring up shame and how unfruitful and ineffective it is, but it's almost damaging. You know, I want to talk for a minute about taking your cues from Jesus as far as leadership goes, because I think there's sort of an unhealthy culture in leadership and especially in Christian leadership, where we think we have to be strong and perfect and have all the answers and charge forward and not admit we need help. And what I tend to see is the more that we buy into that mindset and that way of thinking, it just keeps us getting more and more sick and more unhealthy. And you actually showed us that a strong leader does the opposite. A strong leader actually is real and gets help when they need help and admits and confesses where they're broken, where they're hurting, where they're unhealthy. And I guess I'm curious, where do you take your cues from Jesus for that kind of leadership?
I think my depression and maybe just, my experience with mental health early on, I really created a pretty short fuse within my, or maybe even just being burnt out from being ingenuine in high school or college or whatever, like, but my fuse for running a BS train, like it got pretty short. And I just, I think that a cool, maybe this is from, my training in Young Life, or this is, from just my my own personality, but it was pretty obvious to me early on that if I am like the longer I try to fake it, the shorter I'm going to do leadership well. And it, like, from a very young age, leadership was called out in me as a gift. And I feel like through, you know, those different opportunities in life, I learned different ways that being a leader, not necessarily just, you know, in faith wise, but in jobs and in different volunteer spaces, I was able to learn, how do I do the things that I've committed to? How do I do them well? And I think through that was also a way of like, I think that those were things that Christ had put in me of a way for me to honor them as well. You know, like that my cue from Christ is that if I don't take a nap before coaching volleyball, before coaching middle school volleyball, I am going to be a very cranky and mean coach. And I don't want to be that coach because I will get short and I will be using shame to get the girls to run their laps or whatever. And so I think that the cues that I was receiving from my body, I think are beautiful cues that Christ has given us to listen to what we need physically and emotionally to do our work well. And I think that the energy, Willow, that it took to be fake, it was just so taxing that it was too important to me. My relationships and the people who I led were too important to me to take the energy to be fake and take the energy to pretend like things were okay. And I think that, you know, the cool thing about working in ministry and working, you know, my boss, you know, is a very dear friend of ours. And she also, you know, has been our landlord, and our leaders are also, you know, roommates and are sometimes friends with us. And like, there's this beauty in these intertwined relationships because it begs for congruency in our lives. And it makes it impossible to do life under, you know, trying to hide things, because that community being everywhere draws things to the light. And so it would take too much energy to keep things in the dark, because there was almost no dark, because there were people who were bringing light from every angle. And I think that, you know, again, can be messy, because then you're having conversations with people where you're like, wow, it would be so much easier if I didn't know this about this leader, because they aren't roommates with this other leader who has told me this thing or whatever. But because of that relationship, that conversation can happen of, hey, there are people around you who are noticing that you are living in a way that feels like you're hiding. And when you're hiding, you're not you. You're in fear, and we want to call that out in a way that is caring about that person. And so I guess that is a way that anyway, to be a leader, I want to lead in the way that I want my people to be, and I want them to be able and to have the freedom to share. And so I'm going to share. And in the same way that I want the kids that we lead to also have the freedom to just exist and to share and to wave the flag of who they are. And they won't do that, or they won't feel the space, they won't have the space to do that if we don't create it by doing it ourselves.
Mm-hmm. You know, one of the things as a parent of kids who've been involved in Young Life, I received the letter that you sent out to, you know, the Young Life community and parents, mm-hmm. telling us that you were going to get help. And I knew you personally, and I knew that this was incredibly inconvenient time for you. And you were so, so forthright, so honest, so genuine about your struggle and how you needed to go. And it was so beautiful, Kara. And I think part of why I admire it so much is I think we've actually put Christian leaders on a pedestal in such an unhealthy way where we almost, like pastors and preachers and leaders and all these people, like they have to have all the right answers. They have to do all the right things. They have to have everything together. And I understand the importance of having a healthy leader, but it doesn't leave space for people to be real about where they're at. And one of the things that we talk about all the time at Collide is that God can handle where we're at. He meets us where we're at. Jesus meets people where they're at all the time. And God can not only handle our pain, but he can heal our pain. And that's so important for us to know that we don't have to hide or pretend we have it all together. You know, in scripture, it says that God's power is made perfect in our weakness. So why are we sitting around? Aren't Christians the very people who are supposed to be so self-aware of our brokenness and our sin and our mistakes? And yet we're made as leaders to almost have to be the people who have it all together, which is the complete opposite. I need a savior. I need rest. I need someone who can heal my brokenness. And I've said for a long time, all I really have is pain in my pocket and a God who meets me here. Yeah. And I need this, and I'm inviting people to come along with me to need him and his healing. So let's collide, you know? Mm-hmm. And so when you sent that letter out, I admired your leadership so much because I think what you did was you modeled for kids that it is okay. And not only okay, you can be a leader for God and say, you know what? I need God's healing. I need God's help. And those kids are going to need that permission slip for their own lives in the years to come. And you gave that to them. Mm. And so if I can, like, just give a shout out applause to you in public, I thought it was absolutely incredible. And I guess, you know, we're coming to the end of this podcast, and I have two more questions for you. And one is, if you could rewind back to this time where you probably were waffling on whether or not to get more people in the room and to get help and thought through all the ways that it was inconvenient, people could judge you, and maybe you're just fine with the helps you have in place, and yet you were noticing some scary things about yourself. I guess I wonder, what do you think would have happened if you, as you know, the leader Kara, would have just charged forward and tried to put together? Where would you be right now?
Ooh, I don't think about that a lot, and that's, I think, really good. I feel like I would still have the behaviors and the thoughts, the thoughts and behaviors that really that are kind of under the umbrella of my eating disorder, like those like clinical labels that people put on, like these are the behaviors that encompass your eating disorder. I think those would still exist very they would be very present. They have not been for a very long time. The thoughts, like, oh yes, like we, like those, the thoughts are, those come. But I don't think that I would have the confidence and tools and language and awareness of my support to be able to talk back and to be able to notice as early as I do in my, I'm like, okay, I'm starting to feel this way about this food, or I'm starting to feel this way about this thing or that or the other, you know, it would be too late to intervene before Ed had already, you know, kind of won. But like, but because of my experience of honesty and in therapy and treatment, like the, you know, if if point A is, you know, pre any ed sort of thing, whatever, and then point B is have done the ed behavior, sitting in guilt and shame or whatever, like I am noticed way more towards point A, what's going on inside of me and around me that is causing me to start to want to go towards point B. And therefore, I'm a lot more able to say, actually, tortellini is always allowed, so you can stop that little voice and I'm going to have it for breakfast. Any questions? Or, you know, like there's so many, so much more, just, I don't even know, like knowledge just sounds really like uppy, hippie, I don't know, it just sounds weird to me, but like there's that experience gave me so much more language and tools and ability to say and own my own boundaries, to be able to name what's going on in me. So anyway, if none of that had happened, I would still be just like going from meal to meal, like, was that too much? I don't know. Let's just get rid of it in order to not have to think about it. Let's just have every OCD obsession and compulsion play out, and I'm just living from compulsion to compulsion. Let's just continue to hide from Ricky how often I am giving into said compulsions. Let's just pretend that everything is okay and I am going to blow up or either get found out and lose my job, not because I'm kicked out for being bad, but because I can't do both. I can't sit in this hiding and this trying and this darkness and living with these things and reveal Christ to people. I can't do both well. I have been that leader that was making out with random dudes on weekends while also being a leader. And it doesn't mean that the kids that I was leading didn't meet Jesus because of that. But was I doing it well? Maybe not. Not as well as I could have if I was getting full night's sleep and not worrying about what these random dudes thought about me and was, you know, aiding in my eating disorder because all that I was a body and da 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 da, all these things. Again, like if that, like that, I think we're created for that congruency of our inside and our outside. And so like it was going to burst and hurt a lot of people. And I think that there were times that it already had, to where I don't know where some of my friendships and relationships would be if, you know, if I had blown up or got found out or whatever. Like I think so much trust would have, could have, had been at some point broken, that I have a really hard time. It feels very untrue to say that I would be able to do my job the way that I do, to have a marriage the way that it is, and to have a community the way that it is, if I was still like had a cork in it.
Mm-hmm. Kara, I am so glad that you said yes to God's invitation to get more healing in your life. And I love what it invites all of us into. When I think about those listening, who, you know, their pain is coming out sideways in their life, whether it's in their marriage or they have an eating disorder or are having crippling anxiety or toxic relationships, whatever it is. I know that there's women listening right now who know they need more people in the room of their life. And I guess if you could give them just a quick, like, this is your final word piece of advice for them to take the next step, what would it be?
To believe that, just like I love that visual. Brené Brown talks about that, of the permission slip. Like, dear daughter, like, you have a permission slip. You are so worthy to receive that help, that there is nothing about you that says that you are not good enough to be whole. And you already are beloved. You already are so cherished. And for you to have those, like that, like you're worthy of that healing. And so I would say that if there's any, you know, when those lies come in that justify not getting help, ultimately, above everything, you are worthy of it. You are worthy of wholeness and freedom, period. To get to the point of being in a place where you're given the space to heal requires getting vulnerable many, many times. And so I don't say that lightly or say that it's easy. And so my final push is to keep going until you find and get to those people who are going to put you on their shoulders and who are going to invest in that healing, because it's not necessarily going to be that immediate circle or maybe even a circle out. But if there's a person here and a person there who can then get this other person in the room who then knows this person over here, it's not going to be easy to get there. And you're going to maybe, again, lose people along the way, but that vulnerability over time is going to get the right people there.
Kara, thank you so much for your willingness to share a piece of your story, for your bravery that continues to invite us to say yes to God's healing. That's kind of what we're all about here at Collide. And I love that you're inviting women to seek help and even let someone know they might need help today. And I would say for those of you listening, if that's you and you need help finding a counselor, you need help finding resources, we have a wholeness and counseling program and we will help you find help. So contact us. Go to WeCollide.net and check out our wholeness and counseling page. And there's tons of podcasts and blogs written by counselors. There's also some helps there that help you to get help and even help you to figure out the kind of help that you need. And so we're here to help you. Kara, I know that there's going to be people who want to connect with you after this podcast. How can they do that?
They can email me at my, it's my previous last name, so listen closely because it's a little bit tricky, but it's kara.eckard@yahoo.com. And then if you want to talk on the phone or whatever, we can go from there, but that would be a great initial place to start. Or the same, my first name, last name on Instagram. Oh, my previous last name, the maiden name.
Kara, thank you so much for hanging out with us on the podcast.
Oh, you're welcome. I love this community dearly, and I'm just so thankful for these ways to continue to be a part of it and share these stories of colliding with Jesus. Thank you so much, Willow.
Yeah, it was great to have you.
Thanks for tuning in. To keep up with us, you can find us on Instagram at we.collide, on Facebook as at WeCollideWomen, and you can also visit our website at WeCollide.net to find our blog, resources, event information, and more. One last thing. If you enjoyed this episode, would you take a few seconds and leave us a review? It seems like such a small act, but reviews help us to keep producing this content and help other women find it too. Thanks so much for tuning in to today's episode and letting us walk with you as you seek and collide with Jesus.